Hi, this is Jamara Wakefield, producer of the Bright Moments podcast. For more than 40 years, Dorothon Kirk has been a major force at WBGO, Newark Public Radio. And she has the stories to prove it. Stories about her husband, Rahsaan Roland Kirk, her love of jazz, and her community, Newark, New Jersey. I'm so thankful that her stories will now be shared with the world. Each episode is based on a memory and a photograph that Dorothon Kirk considers to be a bright moment. So here we are at 54 Wayne Shorter Way in the WBGO studios. Dorothon Kirk is with me, and in front of us are three playbills from the summer of 1987. Now, Lincoln Center today is this massive, iconic place, a whole complex dedicated to the performing arts. You've got the New York Philharmonic, the New York City Ballet, the Metropolitan Opera, and of course, jazz at Lincoln Center. One of the gems of this place is Dizzy's Club. Imagine this, sweeping views of Manhattan skyline, overlooking Central Park, ambiance, delicious food, all paired with performances of the greatest jazz musicians in the world. But back in 1987, when these playbills were printed, jazz at Lincoln Center wasn't the established institution that we know today. These playbills, they marked the humble beginnings of jazz at Lincoln Center. So as we hold them, we're not just looking at concert programs. We're looking at a piece of history, the very start of something that would grow into a major cultural cornerstone of New York City. Back then, it was just an idea, a concept being brought to life by a small group of dedicated people. Wynton Marsalis was one of them. Alina Bloomgarden was one of them. And of course, our very own Dorothon Kirk was right there too.
This is how I will start. Alina Bloomgarden, who worked at Lincoln Center at the time, she was director of visitor services, had the idea. And she took it to Mr. Leventhal, who was the then president of Lincoln Center. And her idea was Alice Tully Hall was dark in the summer. Hmm. There were no events happening there. And so she proposed to him that Lincoln Center present a series of jazz performances. Alina's significant other at the time was a jazz musician, but she herself didn't really know jazz, say, as I knew jazz or WBGO, which is why she came here.
Because she knew that you knew.
Yes.
The people.
Yes. I almost fell out of my chair when she told me how much money she had been approved by the president of Lincoln Center to produce three nights.
I mean, it was a lot.
It was a lot. I could probably say it, but it was far more money than I ever thought of working for WBGO. So it was at that point, this lady is serious. She had heard me and obvious to me, WBGO. And so that's why she came to WBGO, for the help that she didn't have. WBGO would promote the events. WBGO announcers would host the events. I would help her to locate the musicians as she came up with ideas for the program. So the first year, it was three nights, and it was her idea. I'm not sure, but perhaps she collaborated with Wynton Marsalis. Wynton was in the mix because he was promoted as the artistic advisor from day one. Elena went to his management in Washington, D.C., and so that's how Wynton became involved. So the first year, three nights. First night was Ladies First, and this was a tribute to women in the business or in jazz, or however you want to say it. The second night was a tribute to Thelonious Monk, and the third night was a tribute to Charlie Parker. Elena came up with different themes for different nights. The first year sold out almost instantly, all three nights. When Jazz at Lincoln Center's board met after those events were over, they decided to add two nights to it. And I have brochures, and I'm sure they are in the magazine. So classical jazz at Lincoln Center went from three nights to five nights. When we went to five nights, Elena came up with an idea of bringing back together the original Duke Ellington band. I remember, and this was really, I'm still amazed today.
That's no small feat.
So that was no small feat.
My goodness.
There was one of the players, he was living in the islands. Mr. Cook, who was in the band, was living, I want to say, in Switzerland. Elena got TWA to be the official airline sponsor, and we didn't have to go into the original budget to pay to fly these people here.
It's like a territorial, like, dream. It's like your fantasy. You have all these resources, all this money, all this support.
Yes.
You just got to do
the daggone thing. You just have to ask. Chances are people will say yes. And if they say no, you just move on to somewhere else. So that's how the original band was formed that we presented on those last two nights, and they were great. Everybody was all dressed up and so on and so forth. Then after the events were over, the performance was over, right there in the lobby of Alice Tully Hall, I can still see it in my head right now. Elena would have a big reception afterwards for certain people. So that's how classical jazz at Lincoln Center started. And we see what grew out of that because of what Lincoln Center is today.
Can you tell me about the name classical jazz?
I think
why not jazz?
This goes into history. And it has to do with musicians. I don't know if you know it, but a lot of musicians always complain that jazz was called jazz, because you may or may not know, that's a term that came out of the brothels. And the guys used to say, "Jazz me, baby," which is a negative. I can't remember what Yusef Lateef wanted jazz called, but he had his own idea of what jazz should be called.
Well, actually, we found the answer, thanks to the internet and Yusef's own words.
My music is, the name of it is autophysiopsychic music, which means music from the physical, the mental, the spiritual, and from the heart.
Rahsaan Roland Kirk hated it, and on the bandstand, he used to say, jazz is as classic as European classical music, so it should be called that. Having said all of that, I can't remember how Alina came up with classical jazz at Lincoln Center, but I know that there was a discussion that it wouldn't be just jazz at Lincoln Center because of the negative connotations that some of the musicians always talked about. There were always articles about musicians, the jazz musicians, not being able to name their own music. And, well, let's just face it, it came out of the Caucasian environment, you know, way back in the day when they had those brothels in Harlem and so on and so forth. So we weren't just going to say jazz.
Right. Mm-hmm. That was not going to
was not going to be. And, you know, Lincoln Center is known for its upscale kind of cultural event. So
still
it's
to
just
this day.
Still to this day, absolutely. And so it was just a natural that it would be called classical jazz at Lincoln Center.
Next up, one of DK's favorite parts of the series was working with Max Roach. Now, if you know jazz, you know the name. He worked across many styles of music and is widely considered to be one of the most important drummers in history. From 1962 to 1970, Roach was married to jazz singer Abby Lincoln, and during that time, she performed on several of his albums. One of the most notable, his landmark civil rights-themed recording, We Insist. And if anyone could get Max Roach and Abby Lincoln in the room together, of course it was Dorothon Kirk.
The one that I really, really loved the most was the one we did with Max Roach. Mm-hmm. I can remember Alina and I meeting with Max Roach. From time to time, we would meet with the different musicians and propose to them that we wanted to do something with them and so on and so forth. And so we used to meet Max Roach. I don't know if the restaurant's still there. It's been years. Fiorella's across from the old Lincoln Center, that was his favorite restaurant.
Love that.
And that's where we used to meet. And we would meet at lunchtime. Max did not want to do what I was proposing. He wanted to do his quartet. Boom. Some people will remember the band he had that was Boom. And I said, Max, please, I would love for you to do your quartet, the choir, and Abby. That was from a record he had previously made on Atlantic Records. And I do believe it had never been performed in public, if my memory serves me correctly. I'm sure the internet will know. Anyhow, Max said, I got to practice the choir. I got to do this, that, and the other. And I knew this, but I didn't buy into it. I knew that the relationship with Max and Abby might not be the best in the world, but I don't get into personal stuff, and he didn't bring it up. And so I persisted and I persisted. Alina said, we have the money for you to do whatever rehearsals you need to do with the choir, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Max agreed, and that concert was absolutely awesome. And I remember being backstage, and I remember seeing Max and Abby embracing. And even though I don't get into personal stuff, they just look so natural together. And look so loving as a couple. In my heart of hearts, I was hoping they would get back together.
Well, it's gonna be all right.
They
y'all.
Were. They were just. They were just such a natural. So we did this, I want to say, for 5 years. I think it was 5 years. And again, I have a bunch of brochures at home somewhere stashed away on the third floor. Maybe I'll dig them out. But anyhow, there came a time that it was decided, and I won't go into the real long history. I'll just tell you different points, that there would be a jazz at Lincoln Center, independent of the Lincoln Center that existed at that time. That's how the current Jazz at Lincoln Center came about, and Rob Gibson was hired as the first director of Jazz at Lincoln Center as we know it today. And I gave you that cassette of the press conference from when they announced what was going to be happening in the future. So I think you have first Alina Bloomgarden to thank for what we have today, and WBGO having the insight to promote it, because again, we were in on something that was brand new. None of us had a clue what would come out of it. But again, everybody was on the same page. It's so important when you're doing events or anything. If you've got a group of people that's headed in the right direction, chances are it's just going to work. And that's the story of Jazz at Lincoln Center.
Carmen McRae, one of the most influential jazz vocalists of the 20th century. What set her apart? The way she puts the beat behind the phrasing and her interpretation of the lyrics. She once said, "Every word is important to me. Lyrics come first, then the melody." So for Carmen, singing wasn't just about hitting the notes perfectly. It was about telling a story, conveying an emotion, making you believe every word she was saying. Now, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. You may have heard some stories about her. She was just as fierce on the mic as she was in person. To be a woman in jazz, you had to be. You had to speak up and speak loudly to be heard in the industry and to be taken seriously as a businesswoman. She had strong opinions and a mighty presence. She said no to bookings and just about anything else she didn't want to do. But if anyone could get her there, of course it was Dorothon Kirk. They had a special relationship, and this was one of those moments.
What really impresses me about the night for Monk, we brought Carmen McRae all the way from California to sing a couple of tunes. And I never will. Alina and I laugh about this also. I think in some other interviews I shared with you how I had worked with her, but I was frightened out of my skull of her.
Yes.
Not that she wasn't cooperative. She just had a rough edge all the time, even when she was being nice. So Alina had come to WBGO. When we would come up with ideas and had to make phone calls or what have you, sometimes Alina came to my office here, and sometimes I got on the train and went over to her office in New York. So that's how we did it. So this particular day, she had come over here to my office, and I had Carmen's phone number, and I don't mean her manager. I had her home number. Don't ask me how how I had
the landline.
But I did. Yes, I absolutely did. So that day, Elena's goal was to call Carmen and see if she would be willing to be involved. Remember, this was a huge budget. It was six figures, and this was in the 80s. That was,
oh my goodness.
That was large.
That's important to say.
Okay, that was the ridiculous. 80s. That was large. So we had no problem making it worth the musician's while to come. So
did anybody turn you down?
Not that I can remember.
Not.
No, not that I remember.
Okay.
The closest we came to being turned down, it wasn't turned down. As I said earlier, Max didn't want to do the program I wanted him to do, but I won.
Right. He still,
I won.
He still did something.
I love Max. But anyhow, Elena's in my office, so she's like, okay, we're going to call Carmen. And Elena was one of these people, she may not have ever seen you before, but she came off as if she's your very best friend. So I got my address book out. There's the number. She's like, will you call? I'm like, no, no, I don't want to. Please, I don't want to call her today. I just can't. Well, you want me to do it? I'm like, well, of course. Here's the number. And so she pulled the phone over, dialed the number, got her on the first ring, and Elena, as if she's her best friend, Carmen, this is Elena Bloomgarden, and I'm from Lincoln Center. The rest is history. She said yes. She came all the way from California, and she did one or two numbers. I know she did the Ballad of Thelonious Monk, but I actually can't remember if she did another tune as well.
This song is built to make you laugh, and we hope you'll enjoy it. And it's called The Ballad, what else, of Thelonious Monk. How about that intro? Don't it get you right here? I used to think cowboy music was the only was. Then I heard Thelonious Monk. The place was filled to the rafters with musicians and the fuzz. They all love Thelonious Monk.
There's a book out. I can't remember what year it was published, but it's called Jazz at Lincoln Center, the First 25 Years, or something like that. And so it's in writing. Elena and I are in the first few pages very prominently. All of this can
you
be...
You two brought jazz to Lincoln Center.
Yes, we did. We did.
It's amazing.
And I need to say this. Much like what's happened all during my life, something came to me, I embraced it, and the rest is history. And everybody that Elena wanted to get in touch with, I really did know how to get in touch with them. So my back then Rolodex, there were no mobile phones.
Actual Rolodex.
There was a Rolodex, and guess who knew how to get in touch with those musicians? Yours truly. And, you know, that all started, of course, when Rahsaan was living, knowing the musicians. And then as the other generations came along, they came to know me as well because the musicians embraced me as one of their own. And that puts me in a unique position when I'm doing anything for other organizations, be it BGO, Bethany, New Jersey Performing Arts Center, because they will say to me from time to time, you know, I'm doing this just because of you, which makes me feel great, but a little bad, but I'm thrilled
right, exactly.
At the same time.
Thank you.
Because they know that whatever money I have, I will share with them the maximum. The equipment is going to be great, and they will be treated royally. So they trust me.
Bright Moments Podcast is produced by WBGO Studios. It is hosted and produced by me, Jamar Wakefield, produced by Billy Robinson, with special help from Corey Goldberg and Becca Pulliam.